come to order on February 7th, 2008. Today we're going to have an informational meeting with Mr. Ron Cannon, Director of the Veterans Employment and Training Services from the U.S. Department of Labor. And I don't know where all my members are, but Representative Schaffer and I are ready to roll. So Mr. Cannon, if you come on up, and please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Ron Cannon, and I'm with U.S. Department of Labor Veterans Employment and Training Service. What we do is provide, among other duties, we provide job protection for reservists, for Guard members, also protection for veterans, reservists, and Guard members against discrimination in the hiring process. We work with an organization of volunteers called the Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve, and we work hand in hand with issues that arise as far as conflicts in the job or any hint of discrimination regarding the application process or the job itself. We do a lot of work with employers, employer organizations, the Guard, units themselves, the reservists, and try to educate them on the requirements of the federal law as far as that protection is concerned. You have before you some statistics that follow as far as what my agency does here in Oregon or has done in Oregon during the past 3 years regarding, first of all, the inquiries that we receive from the employers, from the general public, and the NG stands for National Guard, and you have the reserves, you have the active duty personnel who call us and ask us questions about the different issues that could be attached to the Uniformed Services Employment and Reemployment Rights Act, which is the federal law protecting the jobs. The issues below are basically what was asked of us as far as the specifics on the jobs. You find that most of the inquiries are about just general information, across the board type information, asking us about the law and how it protects. A lot of employers, which is very encouraging, a lot of employers are calling us and asking us about the law. May reveal that they have an employee who is on active duty, who's in Iraq or Afghanistan, or maybe who is just joining the military. We have some that question the fact that the employee is volunteering for military duty, and they are inquiring whether that is covered under the act or not. So it is encouraging. Originally, when we were started, or we got involved with the investigations, administering the law, we had a lot more cases that we ran versus the inquiries or the information gathering from the employers. So. And then also our strong relationship with the ESGR and the Oregon Military Department has helped tremendously too. So we've been able to get the word out a lot better. It's still kind of tough to get it out to everyone. We partner up with the Oregon Military Department and the ESGR to provide briefings to the troops as they're leaving, let them know of their rights, of their responsibilities too, and on the way out and coming back from deployment, we also make sure that they are reminded of other responsibilities coming back to work. Since 2000, you'll note that we've had um, I believe it was 148 open cases. And you'll see the issues are anything from discrimination to hiring to the status of the person when they come back to work. And status is pretty much a catch-all, too, as far as the type of work they were doing, where they were working, the location, the hours, the shift. It could be equipment that they're using. For instance, we had a issue where a person was given a new piece of equipment, went on active duty, came back and was given old rundown equipment to operate. It could be as simple as that. So if you have any questions, we also work with the reintegration team of the National Guard to help as far as career fairs and benefit fairs to help soldiers as far as coming back from deployment, or you know, National Guard members too, as far as career opportunities are concerned.
Sure, please. Yeah, thank you for coming here, and I really appreciate everything you're doing. This is very great, a great program. I think it really takes a special kind of person to be in the military and to be in the National Guard and the Reserve. And I think there's something about them that I think is special. And I think they, maybe I'm going to be presumptuous here, but I think those folks kind of like to work with their hands and get out and really do something and see something that they've actually accomplished. And unfortunately, I don't see anything here. The building trades have a program called Helmets to Hard Hats. And I think, you know, these folks are operating multi-million-dollar pieces of equipment. And I would like to see next time you come here something in here that points out that program, because they're just the kinds of people that they have the work ethic, and they have the ability, and they have this physical stamina to show up on a job site every day and build America.
I agree.
And that's the kind of thing I'd like to really promote if we could.
I agree. We connect through the employment department. We provide grant funding to the vet reps, to house the vet reps in the employment department offices. And they are the connection to such programs, troops to teachers, helmets to hard hats. And they do connect through the trades. And yes, that would be something that we could add to our information.
Okay.
I agree. Definitely agree.
And once again, I really appreciate everything you're doing. This is one great thing about government that we can all be proud of. And
very rewarding.
Amen. So thank
very
you
much.
Very much.
No, I was just wondering, and thank you very much for taking the time to come and see us today, too, at this late hour of the day. But we had a guy in here testifying the other day. He was having trouble when he came back, and he would go to apply for a job, and they'd say, are you in the Guard? Yes. Have you been over to Iraq? Yes. Are you going to go back? I don't know. And that kind of ended the interviews, you know, then he just did. So, and I mean, I don't know how you can show discrimination if I don't, just because I don't hire you, it'd be tough.
It's a very gray area, and it's like any other legal matter. Hopefully you have something in your hand that you can show pretty much black and white, have to be honest, pretty much black and white, that shows that you've been discriminated against. We are very interested in those issues anyway. We are very interested in approaching the employer and asking questions about their practices, their policies. How many veterans do you have on board? How many National Guard members, how many reserves do you have employed among your ranks? We do root out some employers that way that are against hiring reserve or National Guard.
Following up, if I could, sir, in that question, you have the reservist National Guardman who goes into an interview, they ask him about that, and then he never gets a call back, and you can determine that there's discrimination there. What's his cause of action? Can you sue? Can he sue?
If we determine discrimination, mm-hmm. what we do is go after the job itself and lost wages. We are not attorneys ourselves, so we cannot go after punitive damages unless it is very obvious that the employer is very aware and knowingly is violating the law. Then we can go after double damages. If we cannot resolve informally the issue, then the employee has a right to either seek private counsel to resolve the matter or ask to have the issue referred up through the U.S. Attorney General for consideration of litigation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, I'm late. Like,
you want me to go over the?
No, I will go through this. So, but thank you for coming. I appreciate that.
You bet.
Well, we talked briefly before. I think these programs are really important. And I had a next door neighbor who used to work with the Oregon Employment Department, and with these people helping vets get back on the job and back to civilian life and so on. In those days, there's more people transitioning out of the service rather than the reservists that were calling over and over again to go to Iraq and Afghanistan. Any other questions at all? Well, thank you very much for coming down. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You got it. Is there anybody else would like to testify tonight? General.
Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of the Military Department. Just want to add what Mr. Cannon said. Mr. Cannon and his office has been an absolute godsend to our soldiers and reservists alike, and other military members as well, active duty that have come back. Ron's office has dealt with essentially every case that we have where we have an issue. The first place we turn to is his office. And he and his staff, which is very limited, I think he's got one other person and maybe some secretarial help, and they really do jump in and they really do work hard to get these things resolved before it gets to litigation. I would say out of the number that he has dealt with, I'd be surprised if maybe one or two of those actually went into a litigation status. And the rest of them have been resolved through the Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve, which we have two people in Oregon right now that are federally funded that we have in our organization in the military department that actually do that kind of liaison and that kind of work. And they represent all of the services, not just the Guard. So they're they're across service lines. And those two full-time people have teamed up with Ron and the employment department and the reintegration team. And all of these are working in conjunction to try to resolve these issues. It's a shame, but many employers do exactly what was testified to and what you heard the other day in your in a previous hearing. And we know that, but it's incredibly difficult to prove that, and that's where the burden of proof ultimately lies. We've had soldiers who have joined the Guard, gone back to work, and all of a sudden they see their shifts start changing, they see their upper mobility is stifled, and again, it's very difficult to prove that there's a discrimination case going on with that particular individual, because they will write them up and say, well, you were 5 minutes late for work, or you lingered on your break and didn't get back to what you were supposed to be doing. So it's a shame, but it's the reality that we live with, and now that's a small minority of employers. And what's happened, and Ron is not only just doing his day job, but he serves, and he and his staff serve on the Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve Committee, which is voluntary. Typically folks that have been in business, been in the business community, and they have a relationship, particularly, and a notoriety that people recognize the name or recognize the fact that they were a CEO or something to that effect. And that committee goes out and does this work free of charge. They don't charge. They're all volunteers. And they work with these businesses to try to inform them on the law. Well, Ron has to support that with all his efforts, along with these two ASGR employees that we have. So it's really a team effort. And it's a small minority of employers that do that, but it does happen. So,
Mr. Chair, if you would, please. There's a clear distinction, I think, and maybe there isn't, but between an employer that has to have somebody there all the time. I mean, the gentleman that was here before He had to leave.
Right.
And as much as I want him to get that contract back, clearly that service has to be provided somehow without him being there. And I wish, you know, I don't know what his circumstances in his business. I wish he would have been able to provide that service while he was gone. Apparently he couldn't. So I can, there's a distinction between whether you can provide the service and when you can't. Well, and that's different than someone who is clearly discriminating against someone just because they're in the reserves of the National Guard. How do, and I think this is the problem here. How do we, or maybe we're not, balancing, how do you distinguish, how are we distinguished between those two problems, those two dynamics? You see where I'm going here,
yes, sir.
General?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Schaffler, exactly. That is the problem, particularly self-employed folks, which is one of the reasons, as we were contemplating what the gaps in what we do right now with our service members, that was one of the reasons you saw the bill the other day where he testified, was because there isn't a federal program out there right now that can really go back and make this person whole. There just simply isn't. And it's a very subjective kind of thing. I mean, you would have to have a team of accountants to go in and say, well, you know, you got X amount in wages as a major serving in the reserve, and you lost this much business, and, you know, where's that delta, and how would you make that up? Now, there are some SBA loans that he can apply for, and he's been made aware of, and he may be able to get into some of those that are specifically designed since this conflict arose, where they can get in with a little less of their own effort, if you will, and try to help those people reestablish those businesses. So it's very difficult to do. It's extremely difficult to do. Now I will tell you that this legislature in 05, I believe it was 05, we came to the legislature and we said, you know, there's only so much we can control. And what we can control is the state as an employer and how we deal with that as a state. And we were able to pass legislation that allowed local governments, all governments, state government and local governments, to bring back retirees and have them fully employed for backfilling for a state employee who leaves and receive their full PERS and their salary. And the theory being, of all the governments, because we saw this happen actually in a small police department in Eastern Oregon, where they brought somebody in to serve for one of our people who was deployed. The soldier came back, and they've got a young officer who's gone through all the training while they were gone that said he had an investment. And they kind of like him better, maybe like the other guy who's been gone for 18 to 24 months. And it was really difficult to get that person back in, because they had they're not a big agency. They didn't have that fluff. So when that occurred, and we were kind of in a dilemma, and it was a former police officer who used to work for the Oregon State Police, made the suggestion to me, said, why don't you change that? So we came to the legislature, and they did. And they said, you can come in, which is a great deal, because the retiree says, I can't wait to get back to retirement. And I've had this good deal, but they're not competing with this new fellow coming in. So that was a huge, huge thing, I thought. And it made a big difference for public employers in this state, where they can go out and find that retiree, in this case, police officer. And that police officer was more than willing. Had great training, great experience, was a real boon to that small agency, retired state policeman, and helped that agency immensely. So those are the kind of things that we were able to get accomplished in 05, and then again, we did some tweaking in 07, but the bottom line is that the state as an employer, I think, has really leaned forward to try to prevent that. But at the end of the day, and we saw one, and I think Ron may know more about it than I do, but he was one of our guys who was a school teacher down southern South Coast, and he was running into a whole set of problems of getting back. It's a school teacher in a public employment. So I think part of it's education. That's what we got the ESGR to do, to try to go out and let people know that, both public and private employers. Get them educated on what the law is, get them educated on what the responsibilities are for those that leave. But that self-employed person is in a whole new ballgame.
Mr. Chair, may I say, please. I think in the public sector, I think it's easier to deal with. Complications arise, and you shared that. In the private sector, if you have a private business, you're your own contractor, if you can't do it, you lose the contract, and we're trying to help shore up those that obviously have been, you know, their business has been diminished because of it. If you're a private employee, employer, and you have an employee that it's okay if you go off to 1 or 2 weeks for training, but then now you're deployed for 16 months. There's a burden placed on that employer, and they're going to fill that spot. And then what do you tell that person that filled the spot? This is a very, very, very difficult issue here. And I don't know how to... I don't know exactly how to solve it.
I'm not, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair Schaffler, I'm not sure that there is a perfect solution out there, and I think that's the reality that we live in. Again, I think for best part of the last half of the 20th century, post-World War II, the Guard and Reserve was 2 weeks a year, weekend drills, assemblies, and pretty much it. Occasionally, you'd have to go off to take a 6-8-week school, and that was problematic. One of the things we learned early on with our soldiers were that you enlist a young man or a young woman at 18, 19, 20 years old. Well, by the time they get to 24 to 26 when their enlistment's up, you know, a lot of things have changed in that person's life. One of them is that they've probably gotten to a position, whereas before they were working minimum wage jobs, you know, not looking at those jobs as a career. And then all of a sudden, by the time they're ready for reenlistment, they've found a place where they actually do see themselves in a career, whether it be in a, you know, whatever industry it may be in. And they're very reluctant to reenlist. And the reason they're reluctant to reenlist is because they know that they're not long enough in the tooth, if you will, at that particular new job where they actually see themselves as a career to deal with those internal politics that they know they're going to suffer. So they get out. We've actually looked at that and said, okay, now let's get them back. Let's go back and revisit those people at 28, 29, 30 years old, 4, 5, 6 years later, because suddenly a lot of things have changed. One, they know their political state in their particular employment. Two, they probably got 1 or 2 kids. Three, they got a house payment, a car payment, and they're a little more eager to reconsider. And we found that to be the case. But they're more eager to come back in, and they've figured it out by then. But that first initial 25, 26, 27-year-old person, they're real hard to get back in, and those are the most valuable people we have because they got experience. They've made it up to the ranks. They're kind of mid-rank at that point, and we really, really don't want to lose those, but that's our biggest number of losses that we experience.
And one more question, Mr. Chair. Is one of them going to run for Congress anytime soon? You don't have to.
You can put on your TV, it ain't this guy. I guarantee it. So.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to hear improvements. Many years ago in the early 70s, I worked for the Oregon State Police, and at one point I said was interested in getting a commission in the National Guard, and they told me no, they didn't want me to do that because I worked game and they wanted me there on the weekends, and so I knew that they couldn't prevent it, but they just said, we'll transfer you. I mean, they just completely illegal, but that's
subtle but real.
In fact, we had somebody who went to a school and they fired him because he went to the 6-week school or something. And he had to go to court, and he ended up getting his job back. But in those days, there was no union protection for the trooper-level officers, and so he ended up not staying. I mean, they could make you real miserable real quick in those days. But so I'm really glad to hear about the improvements that we seem to be having. I know where I spent most of my career with the Portland Police, they are very good at treating their guards and reservists well and being sure that they're accommodated. The state police, if you went to a summer camp, that was your seniority bump for your vacation time, so you couldn't, even a senior person in the state police couldn't get vacation in the summer if he was in the guard, because they would do that. I mean, just anyway. So
it's a pleasure to tell you report now that I know no state agencies that operate in that manner any longer, but when I first came here 20 years ago, it was a fairly common place that the agency you just spoke about and other agencies as well used that same philosophy very freely. It just isn't the case anymore.
Well, I think it's especially important now that we're using our guard to fight the war and not to be here, not for one weekend a month, 2 weeks a year.
Yeah, well,
and we need to
we certainly have great support from our fellow state agencies now.
Great.
Well, I just wanted to pile up on what Mike said. And as a private employer of one of your guys, and he went over a couple of times, and we were always sorry to see him go, but always happy to have him back, and ended up helping him get a job with another contractor who just did framing because there were short-term stints here and there. But we watched him grow up during his time in the military, and he came back the first time with such an incredible work ethic, and he was very happy to be doing that kind of work, and he worked hard. He outworked everybody, including the boss.
That's the way it should be.
I know he's not listening.
Any further guests?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. General, are there any needs for improvement in the law in this area, in Oregon law?
Mr. Taylor, I believe that right now we're in pretty good shape. Most of what we can do affects pretty much state active duty issues as opposed to the federal issues, and we have tried to mirror the state law with the federal law to make it almost identical. Now, last session we were able to get a bill through that offered protection for residents of Oregon or workers in Oregon who may be in another state's National Guard. Washington kind of led the way on this, and we took a page out of their book because, in fact, the governor of Washington could call the guard up for state active duty, but the individual works in Oregon, and that individual had no protection. So we did get that fixed last session, which was kind of another piece that we didn't have before, but I'm not aware of any of the statutory language now that we would want to go in and mess with at this point. I think we're in really, really pretty good shape, and mainly because of one case at a time. It's amazing, as you've found in your business, you know, one person comes up here and testifies and says, I've got this little problem, and then you realize how it can affect a whole lot more than just that individual. And that's exactly how we've been able to add piece after piece after piece to this set of statutory language over the years. And not to say that there isn't something out there we may need to do that we're not aware of, but right now we're in pretty good shape.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, General.
And thanks, Mr. Cannon, for his efforts.
Okay, if there's no further testimony, I'll close the hearing. And?
No meeting tomorrow, right?
No meeting tomorrow. We'll meet again Monday at 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock.
We're going to the same point. Meeting's adjourned. Thank you.